Hello, and it's good to be back. I'm Jane Johnson, the founder of Careering Into Motherhood. We're going to be dropping this podcast weekly with a series of guests, some of which I'll be interviewing and others I'll be handing over the mic. Our aim at Careering Into Motherhood is to make life as a working mother that little bit easier. And I passionately believe that coaching and a supportive community are absolutely fundamental to that. It's why we have a partnership with over 60 different coaches who can help you with anything from changing careers to parenting children with special educational needs, going through divorce, other relationship challenges, to launching a business of your own. All the support and advice from our coaches is available on our website, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. And don't forget, the Careering Into Motherhood community is also available to you over on Facebook. Just search for our name and apply to join the group. We've got 11,000 other mums who will welcome you with open arms, and you can meet and engage with our coaches there as well. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode and let's get this interview started. My guest today is the wonderfully quick-witted Mary Doyle. Mary began her career in aviation, and she calls herself a chic geek. Mary is never without her lipstick and immaculately dressed at all times. But as a lifelong wheelchair user, she pivoted her career and trained as a coach and disability consultant more recently. She now works with employers to help them be more inclusive of their disabled workforce. Although her style is always light-hearted and fun, she talks about some hugely important subjects and pushes against this idea that doing the right thing always needs to have a business case behind it. A huge advocate for women's rights and, of course, disabled people, Mary is a breath of fresh air, and I'm delighted to have her on the podcast today. Mary, welcome. Thank you very, very much for making the time. I know you're a very busy woman. We were just talking just briefly as an inclusion consultant. Would you just give people a bit of background as to what exactly that means?
Yeah, so hi Jane, I'm super happy to be talking to you today because I like to talk, right? And I know you like a good old chat, so I'm happy to be here. So inclusion consultancy, from my perspective, basically means I'm just trying to make the world a more humanistic place and improve access and inclusion for all people, including disabled people, of which I'm one, basically. So I'm a proud wheelchair user. So it's basically just trying to make the world a more equitable place in every shape and form.
Now, without wishing to be a naysayer, as someone who tries to make the world a more inclusive place for women, even on a good day, that can feel like trying to not just turn the Titanic, but go completely against, I don't know, a tsunami. Or someone in your space, that must feel like that every single minute of every single day, does it not? And how did you get into doing this? I mean, obviously, as you say, you are a wheelchair user yourself.
Yeah. So I can tell you a little bit about my background. So I have a physical disability and just what I call a few spicy mental health conditions. So I have a corporate background. Yeah, part of my charm, Jane. So I have a corporate background in what we call electronic payments software, which is massively geeky and banking oriented. I call myself a chic geek. So I spent 28 years a chic geek. You got to own it, Jane. Honestly, there's no point hiding, is there? That's what I said, a sheet geek. I don't know what you thought I said. Oh my God.
As in Excel sheets.
Oh no, no. I thought I said a bad word. No, it's cool. No. I'm on my best behavior. So basically my background was all in technology, and as a disabled person, I was navigating the workforce like every other disabled person in employment. And basically after how many years? 28 years, I decided I needed to. So I was approaching my mid-40s, right? And I'm just like, I need to do something different with my life. And I wanted to do something more to do with like inclusion and just supporting working disabled people, working women, just improving people's experiences in the workplace, basically. So I decided to use my lived experience of all my life as a disabled person and my personal hobbies about learning about this stuff, and basically left corporate, retrained for about a year, and then basically just threw myself into, so I did my coaching training with two really older, I mean, I call them like Yodas, right? They were just so awesome. And we're still in touch today. But I absolutely had the best coaching experience, like learning from them, which is exactly what I wanted. And started applying all this learned knowledge into basically providing consultancy to help corporates navigate these situations, which they struggle with, right? Yeah, yeah. So I'm tackling it from the corporate side, from the leadership side, mm-hmm. through the inclusion, the workshops, the training. But I'm also trying to tackle it from the employee support side, right. through the coaching and support and mentoring, because it can be quite hard to navigate a workplace or an industry, yeah. let alone the world, which is not built for you, basically. So I'm trying to approach it from all angles in the hope that I'll make some progress.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's amazing. And ever since I've known you, I feel so passionately as well for you in what you do. And I, you know, as someone who listens to your story and what you're trying to do, you kind of think, why on earth would an organization not want to work with you?
Thank you.
I guess, how open are the doors these days to bringing you in as a consultant to help with inclusion?
It's, to be fair, it's much better than it was, I'm probably going to say, 10 years ago, right? There has been, now I know things aren't perfect, but there has been a significant shift in the understanding about how important this is, right? So it's, I think so. You know, people are actually much more willing to learn. They want to learn. They just don't know always how to start, right? So because people are scared, they don't want to put their foot in it or say something, you know, the wrong thing, and therefore the fear of saying anything wrong has kind of put them off sometimes. So I'm here to just remind them that we're all humans, basically, and you know, just to, you know, work with people, the subject matter experts, the disabled people, the inclusion consultants, because we know the solutions. So we have the knowledge. We just need to impart the knowledge and embed it in your culture and your policies and everything you create from this day forth. So it becomes part of your natural behaviours. So it's not actually, even though I'm called Rocket Girl Coaching because I'm a dork, it's not actually rocket science, right? So I'm here to just mitigate that concern.
So some of the things you mentioned there, or the way you're talking, I guess for an organisation, that can sound like, oh my God, that's, you know, as you say, not just the fear of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing, you know, or this awful being accused of sort of virtue signalling, but it also sounds quite expensive. And this is one of the things that we come up against, as I say, when we're focused on gender diversity, but it's the, what is this going to cost? Where's the burning platform? And isn't it easier if I just put my head in the sand and carry on doing things the way I've always done them? So how is it you help to get organisations over the line on those topics?
Yeah, so I think there's two sides to this, Jane. So one is, it's very common that people talk about the business case, right? We have a business case for, you know, race inclusion, gender inclusion, disability inclusion, sexuality. And I'm trying to shift away from the business. Now, the business case, right, we're working with business people. Of course they're going to want to know the business reasons for doing it, right? I totally understand that. But I'm trying to create a kind of a thought change, basically, to understand that actually, yeah, it's nice to have a business case, but we're actually doing this because we are literally all humans trying to do our best work in every situation, basically. So when you start shifting your thinking into encompassing everyone to do their best work, regardless of what their accommodations may be, or, you know, their requirements, then you actually, that's when you start shifting things in a monumental way, that it becomes more embedded in your culture. So it doesn't become like a bolt-on. And then you see beyond the business case, as in, you know, the facts and the figures, because when you do these things, the business is going to grow, you know, organically anyway, and therefore you're going to have, you know, better quality employees, better customer outcomes, and a better profit. So I'm working with corporations from a slightly different angle. Now, of course, I'm going to cover the business case because they are very interested in the bottom line, right? But we're trying to create a shift in their thinking about disability and humanity in general, right? So just to put it into context, you know, I don't know how much disability education most of your listeners may have, but we're talking about, you know, 20 to 25% of the global population are living with a disability, right? So we are literally everywhere. We're probably already in your organisations, because 80% of these disabilities or long-term health conditions, you know, they're non-visible, and many people won't be using an indicator like a wheelchair or a stick or a crutch or whatever it may be, you know, and these employees are quite likely already doing a great job, but would do an even better job if they had some more tools available to them. But there's a worry about approaching that discussion with your leader, because you may be seen as then less proficient at your job, even though you've been doing a great job so far. The barriers, that the kind of emotional barriers and the biases people experience, can really put people off just sharing that information, which is very personal.
It is.
So I'm just here to help people shift their understanding that by creating these cultures and environments, you know, where disclosure is no longer necessary for everyone to get the support they need for their equitable outcomes. You know, that is the actual,
like the holy grail, right?
Yes.
So, and we shift to, when we talk about accommodations, I'm talking about accommodations rather than reasonable adjustments, right? The reasonable adjustments is the legal term that you see in all the, you know, the Equality Act and all the frameworks that you're very familiar with. But when we talk about accommodations, we're talking about the specific needs of all people, right? So this isn't necessarily focused on disability, but if you're going to give people the time and resources they need to do their best work, everyone is going to achieve the equivalent outcomes to their peers and just do better. And consequently, the knock-on effect of, you know, better teams, better products, better services, better profit. So, and that's just, to me, you know, way more inclusive and respectful. So, because when we talk about just reasonable adjustments, it's very focused on the disabled person and uplifting them. But it's like, well, actually, why don't we uplift our entire workforce by doing these fundamental things, whatever they may be, you know, the flexible working, the resting space during the day for whatever the practice may be, you know, shifting away from this implied deficit, you know, about reasonable adjustments, and focus on the holistic solutions, basically.
Sorry to interrupt you, but it's so interesting, because as you're talking, it is absolutely the case where if you do things that help marginalized people, that fundamentally everybody benefits. And
exactly,
you know, like you said, you know, during COVID, actually, I'm really interested, did you see a positive shift in the way organizations became more inclusive during COVID or not?
Well, the COVID is a very good example, right? So obviously during lockdown, it became apparent immediately that people needed to work from home. So we as a disabled community have been asking for that accommodation for, you know, pretty much 20 years since we got decent internet access that was, you know, rock solid. However, it was only when it became useful for the leadership team and the non-disabled people was it considered an essential, right? At that point, it became an absolute essential. And it just shows that the choice was always there. But as a business, as a society, they chose not to do that. So, you know, that kind of tells me how disabled people are viewed, you know, in the workplace when they request their accommodations. You know, we're not obviously taken as seriously as we should be, basically. So this is an example of effectively an attitudinal barrier, Jane. Yes. So, you know, it was a choice. So until it served themselves personally, it was of no interest to them. So, yeah, so, and now that obviously they're trying to take us all back into the work, into the workplace, into the office, that is a shift kind of back into the, you know, one size fits all kind of approach, basically, which we know doesn't work.
Exactly. I just don't get people at their best. You know, for some people, it's great to be able to go in and be around people.
Exactly. It should be a choice.
If you're a coach listening to this and you want to join our mission to make life that little bit easier for working mothers, then we have a limited number of places available on our coaching partnership programme in 2024. You'll get access to our community of thousands of mums interested in coaching advice, in-person support with your business development and marketing, and opportunities to create a valuable content library that resonates with your potential clients. Coaching can be a lonely business when you're on your own. We've got a supportive cohort of around 60 other coaches who can help you. And we bring marketing and communications tools and an active community of mums. I'm Jane, the founder of Careering Into Motherhood, and as a fellow female founder, I want to see your business thrive, and I want to help more women to access the game-changing powers of your professional coaching. Email me for more details, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. That's jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. Now back to the interview. I mean, these are supposed to be, you know, some of the brightest and greatest people running these organisations. And some of the things you've just talked about seem so obvious. And like you've covered off as well, there, you're not even talking about reasonable adjustments, which can be, you know, that there are things that can be done that are not hugely expensive. So all of that considered, and when you talk to somebody like you as well, it makes perfect common sense. Why is it so hard for organizations to get it right? $1 million question.
I think there's probably several levels to this, right? I think you'll know through the work you do, our world is built on a set of structures that have been in place for hundreds and hundreds of years. So dismantling that is a challenge, right? So, and also, it's possibly a combination of how I approach my work is it's very non-judgmental and non-shaming, yes. Right? You know, I take my work really seriously, but you know, I don't take myself too seriously, right? So if I can use a bit of irreverent humour to lighten the load, yeah, and just to get my message across, I'm going to do it, right? Because the world is seriously, it's very serious, it is. You know, I don't want to add that load. I'm trying to reduce the load and make things easier for everyone, including the leaders. But I think there's also a component of, yeah, they don't know what to do, so they do nothing, basically. So if they can partner with organizations and people who know what they're doing, you know, we will literally take the burden, yes, and help them through this, right? Because this is what we do. But there's an element, I think, also of, you know, pushback if you get it wrong, you know, loss of face, you know, potentially loss of power, right? Because people think they're going to lose their power by doing greater inclusion. Yeah. Really, when it's actually you're giving the power to everyone, you don't lose your own power. But obviously, people don't understand the principles of equality and diversity, inclusion, and accessibility. Then, you know, of course, they'll be, yes, fearful. Yeah. People are always fearful of things they don't understand. So, you know, we have to just normalize, yeah, disability, because it is literally everywhere, right? And whether it's temporary, permanent, you know, obviously, as the older we get, yeah, the more, yeah, disabled we become naturally, right? So it's just destigmatizing it, because, you know, there is no shame to carry, basically. So if we can get people just to relax a little bit more around the topic, yeah, we can probably make more progress.
Just having really inclusive conversations, yeah, because as you said, you know, what was the statistic? 20 or 25% of people are, who are living with some sort of,
yeah, between 20 and 25% have a condition which impacts their daily habits, you know, in a long-term way. So, and that could be, you know, the iconic, yeah, wheelchair symbol is a bit of a misnomer, because that proportion of people, including myself, is tiny, absolutely tiny. But in context, the built environment is one of the biggest barriers for that cohort. So we're disproportionately impacted. So, but if we get to see that, you know, people are living, you know, in the workplace, going about their daily life, you know, holidaying and stuff, mm-hmm, they're living with, you know, stoma, mental health, diabetes, mm-hmm, a gazillion different conditions, right? And not everyone who lives with a disability is necessarily disabled, because if you're in the environment where you've got everything you need, there are no barriers. Right, so not everyone's going to experience discrimination, but many people will at some stage. So it's all very fluid, yeah, basically, and not really binary at all.
But I just think as well, if you're coming back, yeah, as an organisation, and you shared a really good piece on LinkedIn last week, actually, I'll put it in the show notes, which was to your earlier point about let's stop talking about the business case for inclusivity, and let's just start doing the right thing. Because why would you not want your people to be able to work at their absolute best? Yeah.
Yeah, the best. You want the best employees. You want to get the best employees, and you want them to stay because you're investing in their growth and their, you know, so they're getting rewarded, you know, through promotions and all the other things that they want to get out of their work. So, you know, actually what we're trying to, the fix really is just understanding the human connections and the, you know, building those human connections and the understanding of, you know, inclusion. The rest is actually the practical things, right? There's a thousand different practical things you can do, and they're listed everywhere. You can get them everywhere. But if you can get your head around the actual, the concept of shifting your thinking and unlearning some of those, you know, biases that we all carry, right? Because we're human. We are full of biases. It's part of, you know, part of who we are. But we can mitigate them and minimize the impact they have, basically. So just a lot of unlearning, Jane, combined with new, fresh learning.
Older, you know, as you get more senior up an organization, you get very stuck in your ways. It's really hard to unlearn.
Yes, because if it's, if it's worked and taken you that far, you're probably not going to want to change your strategy because it got you that far.
So can you give us some examples? I'm sure you're asked all the time. Who are the organisations that really get it right and things like that? And I don't know, in your experience, Mary, in mine, I'm asked something similar. And I always say there is no one single organisation that gets it absolutely right all the time. There are tend to be pockets of greatness, and that's usually down to a leader or a manager. But do you have one or two examples of some good strategy, some good things that people might be able to implement?
Yeah, so, I mean, what I would say, Jane, is that, you know, you don't have to wait for governmental legislation to be, you know, the employer of choice. You can literally write your own policies, right? So I guess it's just trying to be, you know, working as a leader, we're talking about innovation and risk-taking. So an example that I really like is Holly Branson in Virgin. She massively overhauled the parental leave kind of program, right? So they introduced 12 weeks of paid neonatal leave onto their maternity, paternity and adoption leave, right? They've got leave for employees to help deal with family emergencies. That's 5 days a year of paid leave, and that's 10 years paid leave a year to support people who've experienced bereavement, right? So they're really pushing to just do a great leadership job. So, I mean, I absolutely adore how they're doing it, because they're not waiting for they're not waiting for the government to make these things law. They're just saying, well, this is what we believe will help us the best as a business and our, as our workforce, and we're going to do it, basically. So I'm a big fan of Holly Branson, Virgin, probably called Virgin O2 now. But I tell you who I'm not so keen on, and I used to be a raging fan, Elon Musk, right? So he gave a masterclass last year of what not to do when he let thousands of his Twitter staff go, especially this, you know, with a few disabled staff members. It was absolutely horrendous. And, you know, for me, it was crushing, because it gave me a real insight into how he views disabled people. So I was just like, yeah, it used to be cool, and I used to think you really rocked, but now it's like, don't be like Elon, basically. I was so disappointed, Jane. I'm not going to lie. I thought he was awesome. But then I was just like, oh, you're not such a good human after all.
The reverberations across the media, given the size of employer that they are. And I don't know whether that was a positive, because I think so many people were shocked, disgusted, angered by the way he treated his people. And yet, when you look at them as an employer, certainly on a global scale, they're absolutely micro. And should they have therefore had that level of focus on them? I think if there were plenty of employers with the same sort of number of people who would never command the airwaves the way he did, but then I guess that's his level of influence, isn't it?
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of buying a platform, right?
Yeah.
Got to be some perks.
thank you very much indeed for your time today. And I think we'll put some details in the show notes about how people can find out more about you. I think, Mary, the one thing that you always get across and is just how through listening to disabled people or listening to marginalised people, you can get that input, and you know you're not going to get it right every time, but you can make some small focused changes that would probably have a huge impact. So thank you.
Yeah, and I will say it's progress over perfection, Jane. Seriously, just start, right?
Yeah.
So every single time.
I love that. So, thank you very much. And it's been a joy speaking to you as ever. I love it.
Super welcome. Sheet anytime.
Geek, my little sheet geek. Progress, not perfection. It can be easier to do nothing for fear of getting things not perfectly right every time. I think that's often the case for many senior leaders when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Not used to failing, not comfortable with not getting the accolade. It's often easier to ignore the reasons why being more inclusive really is good for business. But when 20 to 25% of your people are living with disability, and you're not acknowledging that, you're also not acknowledging